from deep inside your radio. Ladies and gentlemen, once again from London town, where the heat wave has finally broken. And I know there's been heat waves all over the United States. There's been heat deaths, all sorts of things. But you have to understand, in Europe, even in London town, they have the heat. They don't have the air conditioning, interestingly enough. And I realized this week that one of the things that London has in common with Los Angeles is in Los Angeles, it rains every year. It doesn't necessarily rain a lot, but it rains every year. And somehow people in Los Angeles always forget that. Always forget how to drive when it rains. Always forget to build streets with drainage for when it rains. Similarly in London, last week they were reporting, this was the hottest day ever since 1868, since 1911, since last year. It gets hot every year. They forget it gets hot every year, and they forget to put in air conditioning every year. On the irony beat, the European heat wave has forced nuclear power plants. That's the hope of our generation for clean, modern electricity, ladies and gentlemen. But the European heat wave has forced nuclear power plants across Europe to reduce or halt production. The reason? The weather has caused dramatic rises in the temperature of the rivers used to cool the plants. So there goes that. In the winter, it's good. In the summer, maybe you have to burn coal. Some fabulous quotes this week, ladies and gentlemen. People have gotten it said. At his hearing for his permanent appointment as United States ambassador to the UN, because he's done such a bang. Look at how we've reformed the UN in the last year, thanks to John Bolton, the recess appointee. Senator Lincoln Chafee, moderate Republican, so-called of Rhode Island, challenged Bolton's claim that the root cause, you know, the Bush administration is now joining the liberals who always wanted to get at the root causes of crime. Bush administration wants to get at the root causes of the conflict in the Middle East. And Bolton had claimed that the root cause of the war between Israel and Hezbollah is terrorism. Quote, you're a brilliant man, Chafee told Bolton. That statement doesn't make any sense. Terrorism is a device. There's got to be something deeper for the root cause. Bolton replied, quote, I think the real root cause is the absence of a fundamental basis for peace in the region, unquote. But for pure tautology in action, there's this from White House spokesperson Tony Snow this week.
I think the real business right now of trying to move forward in Iraq is to make sure that Prime Minister Maliki and his cabinet and his government are able to move forward.
That's the way to move forward, is to make sure they can move forward. Richard Armitage, former Deputy Secretary of State in the Bush administration, comes a little clean this week. Quote, on the subject of, no, I'm not quoting yet. I quoted prematurely. I withdraw that quote, Mark. He's on the subject of the Bush administration's diplomacy in the Middle East. Quote, we get a little lazy, I think, when we spend all our time as diplomats talking to our friends and not our enemies, unquote. Get me Syria on the phone, will you? Also on the subject, a European security research fellow at the Institute of Strategic Studies in London, Jean-Yves Hain, yeah, he's French, said, the U.S. angle, quote, the U.S. angle is to put Hezbollah in the same box as the global war on terror. Hezbollah, Hamas, and Al-Qaeda are all part of the same basket, he continues. The Europeans are more inclined to acknowledge the world is far more complex than this Bush mantra, unquote. So when you want complexity, ladies and gentlemen, call Europe. On another subject, still another great quote. This is a 14-year-old girl attending a focus group screening of Oliver Stone's movie about the World Trade Center disaster. Quote, I remember back in 2001 when it happened on the news, I kept thinking, this isn't real, it's just one of those disaster movies. This movie made me feel September 11th was real for the first time. So just to review, when she saw it for real, she thought it was a movie. When she saw it as a movie, she thought it was real. Slap her, please, before she reproduces. And apropos again of the Middle East, evacuation, according to the Washington Post, is a dirty word at the State Department. During deliberations at the department about getting Americans out of Lebanon, it was decided that evacuation was too negative a term. So the language used by the State Department should not include that word. Departure assistance and safe passage are preferred. Also, those people assisted out of Lebanon, or departees. People are transported out. The total number of assisted departures is rising. You may remember in New Orleans, refugees was not desired, and evacuees was the preferred term. So you never know. You have to keep on top of this thing. And finally, as the quotes of the week, there is this from President Bush's news conference on Saturday with British Prime Minister Tony Blair, president, referring to the situation in Lebanon.
We recognize that many Lebanese people have lost their homes, so we'll help rebuild the civilian infrastructure that will allow them to return home safely.
Yeah, we recognize that. So people in New Orleans, if you want federal help reconstructing your homes, get Israel to bomb you. Hello, welcome to the show. from the height of Leicester Square in London, high above Leicester Square. What are we? A story up. Wow. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Our last from London. It's onward to Edinburgh. I'll be wearing a kilt next week, but you won't know. Ladies and gentlemen, while we've been focusing on all that interesting war stuff, watch the other side of the world. Pakistan has, our good friends, have begun building what independent analysts say is a powerful new reactor for producing plutonium. That's what this world needs, ladies and gentlemen, is more plutonium. Because the Iranians can't, a reactor for producing plutonium, a move that if verified, this is according to the Washington Post, would signal a major expansion of the country's nuclear weapons capabilities. This is only the country that sold, I'm sorry, it wasn't the country, it was just the head of their nuclear program. He was a rogue, he's under house arrest, we can't talk to him. Sold nuclear materials and plans to, what, Iran, North Korea, Libya, they're good people, they're people-pleasing people. Satellite photos of Pakistan's Kushab nuclear site show what appears to be a partially completed heavy water reactor capable of producing enough plutonium for 40 to 50 bombs a year. That's enough. Maybe. I'd like more, but what are you going to do? South Asia may be heading for a nuclear arms race that could lead to arsenals growing into the hundreds of nuclear weapons or at minimum vastly expanded stockpiles of military fissile material, according to David Albright and Paul Brannan. To Washington-based experts at the Institute for Science and International Security. Hey, that's junk science, isn't it? No, it's not. It's real science. Pakistan's nuclear program has matured, says a senior Pakistani official, seeking anonymity lest he be killed by the government. We're now consolidating the program with further expansions. The expanded program includes some civilian nuclear power and some military components. Pakistan, like India, has never signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Did we know about this? Yes, apparently we did. We? Who are you looking at? The Bush administration acknowledged early this week it had long known about Pakistan's plans to build a large plutonium production reactor, but the White House is working to dissuade Pakistan from using the plant to expand its useful nuclear arsenal. Just build the plant and let it sit there. Blinking. Reassuringly in the night. We discourage military use of the facility, said White House spokesman Tony Snow. Use it as a shoehorn or a shoe tree. The acknowledgement came as arms control experts and some in Congress expressed alarm about a possible escalation of South Asia's arms race. Some also sharply criticized the administration for failing to disclose the existence of a facility that could influence the upcoming congressional debate over U.S. nuclear policy towards India and Pakistan, speaking of which, two Indian firms have been selling missile parts to Iran, according to U.S. government officials, late in the week, acknowledging privately that the secret decision should have been shared, the secret decision to impose sanctions on the two firms should have been shared with the House of Representatives before it voted this week to support U.S. plans to sell nuclear technology to New Delhi. Can we blow up another part of the world? Because we've done so well. By the way, I think I recognize the pattern going on with our foreign policy. It's called doubling down. Losers often do it. It's a last-ditch strategy by a gambler on his way down. This is not the first time Indian companies have been sanctioned for supplying Iran's suspected weapons program. The timing of the sanctions, which were not revealed before the House vote, elicited angry responses from arms control experts late in the week. Bush administration officials say Hezbollah fighters in Lebanon are using Iranian-made rockets against Israeli civilians, and some Democrats have questioned whether Indian companies may be involved in manufacturing the rockets. I think there was a report this week that British manufactured parts are in somebody's rockets, so the Brits have a role to play. And that's all they really want, a role to play. Ladies and gentlemen, back to Iraq. It's still going on. A little kerfuffle over there. U.S. Agency for International Development failed to monitor a critical hospital project in southern Iraq that ran badly behind schedule and significantly over budget. This according to government auditors, swooping in always too late. A hospital intended to be a 50-bed facility that would provide urgently needed medical care to women and children in the city of Basra was originally going to cost $50 million and be completed by the end of last year. The price tag is now $169 million and will not be finished until late 2007. And here are the three words that really count. If at all. We might just have a $169 million shoe tree. Auditors with the Office of the Special Inspector General for Iraqi Reconstruction found that U.S. aid officials neglected their management of the project, repeatedly underestimating how long it would take and how much it would cost. The contractor was the Bechtel Corporation. You'll hear that name later in the broadcast. Stow it away for future reference. Which is 273 days late and $48 million over the expected cost right about now. The auditors recommended that USAID order Bechtel to stop work on the project. The project has been championed in speeches by Condi Rice and Laura Bush, just one of many in Iraq that have failed to meet expectations as the U.S. reconstruction role winds down. A representative of Bechtel told the New York Times that security problems had hampered the company's progress. Auditors also found there's no overall plan for transferring U.S.-initiated reconstruction projects to Iraqi control, no schedule for when they'll be completed. A planned first responder network is ineffective because of communication problems. Well, we've exported that from over here. We know how to do that. We do know how to do communications problems during disasters. So we've mentored them in that. And the U.S. has devoted little time or money to a program aimed at rooting out corruption in the Iraqi government. So case closed. Meanwhile, whatever happened to women? No, whatever happened to the Senate Intelligence Committee's long-delayed report on the use of intelligence in the period leading up to the Iraq War? Well, might you ask, it was supposed to have come out last year. Then in November, Senate Democrats briefly shut down the Senate to protest the fact that it hadn't come out yet. Republicans then promised quickly to wrap up the inquiry. Senator Pat Roberts, the Republican chairman of the Senate Committee on Intelligence, said the report was near completion and there was no need for the foo-foo in November. That, need I point out, was 9 months ago. Says the Washington Post, the committee has yet to complete its work. Just two of five planned sections of the committee's findings are fully drafted. Roberts' spokeswoman says the slow pace is partially the result of his desire to give all members a chance for input. Sections may come out in September, the first two, but the section most Democrats want to see is not yet in draft form and might not emerge until after when, class? When do you think? After what? That's right, the November elections. Isn't that wild? Isn't that nutty how that happens? That section will examine the administration's deliberations over pre-war intelligence and whether its public presentation of the threat accurately reflected the evidence officials viewed in private. We wouldn't want to see that before the election, would we? You know what I think we need? I think we need the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Just to clear the air. Just to freshen the atmosphere a little bit. U.S. President George Bush has apologized to Tony Blair over the use of Prestwick Airport to refuel planes carrying bombs to Israel. President's spokesman said Bush gave a one-line apology for the fact that proper procedures had not been followed. Some air traffic controllers at Prestwick near Glasgow, have raised concerns about handling flights carrying bombs. President Bush, quoting the spokesman, did apologize for the fact that proper procedures were not followed, but that was all. It was just one line as part of the introduction. The president said, sorry, there was a problem. It was a gracious thing to do, said the president's own spokesperson. If your own spokesperson can't call you gracious, who can? And speaking of whom, White House Press Secretary Tony Snow, the same self-same spokesperson, apologized this week for suggesting that President Bush's veto of stem cell research funding stemmed from his belief that stem cell research amounted to murder. He said he was overstating the president's position. What does he believe? It's manslaughter? He would not use the term murder, Snow told reporters.
Sorry, sorry, sorry.
Oh boy, is this guy sorry. Mel Gibson has apologized for what he said when he was arrested on drunk driving charge in Malibu. The wire service stories did not say what exactly he was apologizing for, but the website TMZ.com, entertainment website, well, an entertainment news website, has four pages of the original report prepared by the arresting officer in the case, a county sheriff deputy named James Mee. According to the report, Gibson became agitated after he was stopped on PCH and told he was to be detained for drunk driving. The actor began swearing uncontrollably. Gibson repeatedly said, "My life is effed." Law enforcement sources say the deputy, worried that Gibson might become violent, told the actor he was supposed to cuff him but would not as long as Gibson cooperated. The deputy asked Gibson to get inside. Gibson said, "I'm not going to get in your car," and bolted to his car. The deputy quickly subdued Gibson, cuffed him, and put him inside the patrol car. The entire exchange has been audio taped. Gibson told the deputy, "You mother, I'm going to blank you." Gibson almost continually, quote, "threatened me," says the deputy, saying he owns Malibu and will spend all of his money to get even with me. Then Gibson launched, according to the report, into a barrage of statements about the blanking Jews. "The Jews are responsible for all the wars in the world." Gibson then asked the deputy, "Are you a Jew?" Gibson's apology blames the entire episode on the alcoholism with which he's been trying to deal his entire life, ladies and gentlemen, and he is sorry. Japan Airlines CEO Haruka Nishimatsu apologized for not disclosing to stockholders the company's recent issue of new shares, which prompted the stock price to plunge. Nishimatsu said the capital increase aimed to show the new management determination to turn the struggling carrier around. "I apologize to our existing shareholders for causing trouble, but I ask for their understanding," he said. British jockey Paul O'Neill, who was caught on camera headbutting his horse, has apologized for his stupid mistake. Horse racing fans in Britain watched with disbelief at O'Neill's Zinedine Zidane-like reaction to being dislodged by his mount, City Affair, at Stratford on last Sunday. Sorry, the 26-year-old Irishman, oh, well, that explains everything, who now faces a ban, had endured a torrid time getting City Affair to the starting gate. The fractious hurdler shied and dislodged him as they veered towards the starter's car. As O'Neill grabbed the reins, he was shown by Racing Channel at the races, butting the horse. Quote, "It was a stupid mistake, and I apologize to the public," said O'Neill. "It took me 5 minutes to get the horse to the start, and he was reluctant to join the others. He unseated me, and I twisted my knee, and as I held on to him, I was in shock as he was diving towards the starter's car. The peak of my riding cap touched him, but it wouldn't have hurt him at all. There was no power in it. I'm annoyed with myself. I wouldn't be with horses unless I loved them, and I apologize for what I did," unquote. He then asked whether the horse was a Jew. No, he didn't. I'm sorry. Also in England, a Lincolnshire woman said she and other passengers were forced to pay for bottled water on a plane when its air conditioning failed. Kay Brooks from Stamford was flying back from France with her family on Friday when onboard temperatures reportedly soared to 90s. Several passengers wrote to operator BMI Airlines to complain. The company has since apologized. A spokesman said the crew gave water to the passengers who needed it most. Ms. Brooks said, "As soon as they said there was a charge of $2 a bottle, I said to the hostess, 'Are you not providing complimentary water?' But the hostess said she was not allowed to." BMI apologized for the uncomfortable conditions passengers experienced. A spokesman said there was only a limited amount of drinks on board the plane, so they could not hand out complimentary water. Yeah, when there's too few bottles, you have to charge for them. That's basic economics 101. The chief of police in Vancouver is apologizing for any confusion he may have caused when he placed a shooting target on the desk of the city manager and spoke of the enjoyment he received from, quote, "a day on the range." So it's not just Americans. It's Canadians, too. Steve Case, co-founder of the one-time biggest online service AOL, apologized this week for the company's merger with media conglomerate Time Warner. In an interview broadcast on PBS, Case said, "Yes, I'm sorry I did it," referring to that merger. It was one of the worst corporate mergers in history, according to most experts, destroying some $200 billion in shareholder value. And he is sorry. He must have owned some stock. Dateline Boston, WRKO Radio's John DePetro returned to the air following a two-day suspension and apologized for calling the head of the Massachusetts Turnpike Authority a, quote, fag, unquote. Quote, on Tuesday, the language that I used was offensive. It was stupid. There was no excuse for it, and I apologize, DePetro told radio listeners. There were many, many, many members of the local and national community who were offended by that language. I apologize to those people. I apologize to the management and listeners of WRKO, the conservative radio host said. He continued, that is not the type of language that should be used on any show and certainly will not be used on my show ever again. He sounds sorry. Rock newcomers The Automatic caused mayhem on a British morning TV show when they stripped to their underpants and set about destroying the set. The group were playing their hit track Monster on GMTV's Entertainment Today when they attacked the garden set. Embarrassed presenter Ben Shepherd apologized on behalf of the half-naked rockers, joking, quote, they obviously had too many additives in their breakfast earlier. Daniel Shore, NPR news commentator, said it's absurd when noting the network's policy of barring outside reporters at his 90th birthday party. It's absurd, he said. I don't want to start an argument with NPR, but I regret that, and I apologize. And finally, Madonna has apologized to our Australian friends after she dropped that country from her confession tour so she could take her children to school instead. Madonna's children were disappointed since they were looking forward to seeing special wildlife in Australia. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. See how it freshens the air? It's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
A common theme of love.
This is the show from London. And some social notes, ladies and gentlemen, from basically from back home. Tony Blair, you know, has arrived in the United States. He had that press conference with President Bush. Thank you. And now he's in California, apparently. Welcomed with a huge party in San Francisco by former Secretary of State George Shultz. Now, that wouldn't be interesting or important or noteworthy, except that George Shultz is an advisor to American construction company behemoth Bechtel Corporation. I told you it'd come back. Bechtel Corporation, which is bidding for a British nuclear company. Yes. And for building Olympic facilities in East London. So why would Tony Blair be over at his place? No real reason. They want the British nuclear fuels. So the next time they have to shut down the nuclear plants during a heat wave, you can blame Bechtel. Other social notes of note. This just came out, but it happened a couple years ago. On a congressional trip to Estonia, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton astonished her traveling companions by suggesting that the group do what one does in the Baltics, hold a vodka drinking contest. Delighted, the leader, this is in the New York Times, delighted the leader of the delegation, Senator John McCain, quickly agreed. The after-dinner drinks went so well. Memories are hazy on who drank how much, says the Times. That McCain, an Arizona Republican, later told people how unexpectedly engaging he found Mrs. Clinton. Quote, one of the guys was the way he described her. However, since they are both probables for running for the presidential nomination in 2008, one in each party, the amity may be coming to an end. Advisors to McCain have put a stop to him inviting Mrs. Clinton on any more trips. The self-same Hillary Clinton had a breakfast lunch fundraiser this week, hosted by Rupert Murdoch. There were no Fox News cameras to record the event at Murdoch's News Corp headquarters in Midtown Manhattan, where after years of attacking her, the conservative Murdoch hosted the fundraiser for Clinton's Democratic Senate campaign. The campaign refused to even confirm the time or location of the fundraiser. No estimate of the money taken in or the number of people who attended was released. And speaking of, see, it's all tying in this week. Man, the threads just weave. 250 News Corporation executives are gathering this weekend for a management retreat at a posh California seaside resort, according to the L.A. dog trainer, Pebble Beach. Speakers will include British Prime Minister Tony Blair, fresh from hanging out with George Shultz, former President Bill Clinton, Vice President Al Gore. A few more folks coming, I think. A five-page agenda obtained by the L.A. Times reveals the guest list. Let's see who else is coming. News Corporation, of course, declined to discuss details of the program. They're a free speech kind of operation. According to the agenda, Murdoch will make some opening remarks before turning over the podium. Here we go to Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Senator John McCain. See? It all ties in. We'll run a panel and Bill Clinton will conduct a town hall style discussion. Clinton, Bill Clinton, fresh from having appeared with Senator Joseph Lieberman as that senator conducts a furious campaign to avoid being unseated by upstart Ned Lamont, who is at last glance pulled even in the polls with Lieberman, who, of course, was Al Gore's vice presidential running mate in 2000. It just sounds to me, you know, maybe I'm wrong. It sounds to me like an episode of Clinton something next here on the show.
Clinton something. The Harlem Years.
So, Mr. President, how's your golf game?
It's fine, Mr. Governor.
It's Arnold.
Well, I suppose I should say, call me Bill, but, you know, I've got enough scars getting the Mr. President title, so...
Yeah, but, so, what's your handicap in golf?
Depends who I'm going to be playing with. And who's going to be keeping score?
Yeah, I don't think you get to be invited to this conference if you don't play golf that way.
So, you staying around for the whole shebang?
Oh, I wish, but it's hard to hide in your own state, you know, especially now.
Yeah.
You call one state of emergency. Suddenly everybody wants a state of emergency. It's like a status symbol, you know, like a Lamborghini that you park on the street.
Yeah. Tell you what, don't get Al started on this heat wave thing. He'll pop out a laptop and a DVD and make you watch his movie all over again.
Again?
Well, I had to. Mm. So, have you seen our host?
No. So far, I've just seen his money.
No shuck, man. These flower arrangements are bigger than downtown Little Rock.
Bill.
Oh, speak of the devil.
Hey, Governor Schwarzenegger, Mr. President. Isn't this something?
Congratulations, Al. You're now opening movies bigger than I am.
Well, I had a better supporting cast. Tell you one thing. Now I understand what you meant about grosses from $1. Too late.
Hey, speaking of media, how's your TV channel going, Al? I never get a chance to see it.
Well, you're not the target demographic anyway, Bill, but we're about the hottest thing in premium-tier digital cable right now.
Well, I got a question from... Excuse me. Yeah.
Mr. President, sorry to bother you. It's Senator Lieberman again.
Hey, Joe, had a great time with you last week. Well, now it's this week, and I'm here with...
I thank you so much for coming up to Connecticut and standing beside me. That meant a lot to me after all we've been through.
Oh, Joe, if I held a grudge against everybody who denounced me during the bad old days... I'd never make any money, but I'm with...
Normally, this is a call my campaign manager would make, but I thought I should make this call.
Hey, Arnold, Al, it's Joe Lieberman.
Hi, Joe.
Hello, Senator.
Hi, fellas. You know, Mr. President, just a couple of things, because I know that you're busy relaxing out there.
Yeah.
Is there any way you could make room in your schedule for taping a couple more TV spots with me?
Well, I really don't have my schedule on me, man.
You want to use my BlackBerry? I can probably access.
Well, just a conceptual question for the moment, pending availability. Then one spot would be the two of us walking along the coastline, just having a thoughtful conversation about the responsibilities of a superpower, although you wouldn't actually be hearing us. You'd be hearing music.
Yeah. What music?
Well, I think they're trying to clear Hey Joe. Do you know it?
Know it. I played it.
Well, Mr. President, I shouldn't be taking your time.
Arnold, stick around just a minute, huh? Look, Joe.
The other one would have the two of us in some kind of very lively, enthusiastic community meeting. Mm-hmm. You know, shaking hands and listening to people's concerns.
Yeah.
But again, you'd just see us.
Yeah. What would be the music for that one?
Ideally, don't stop thinking about tomorrow.
Boy, have you cleared this with Hillary? I mean, it's fine with me, but that was her choice for our music, so...
Oh, she was going to be my very next call.
Okay, well, I got the governor...
Because I tell you, this is not out of flattery, but because it's true, Bill, you're the only thing keeping me in this race. You know, without you, I'm afraid I look to the people of Connecticut the way... Tony Blair looks to the people of Britain like the president's...
Tony, isn't that's something? Just as you said his name, he's walking right by. Tony, come on over here, my brother in triangulation.
Bill, I think Al and I are going to watch his movie.
Oh, well, can't wait to hear your opening remarks.
I can't wait to read them. So long.
Bye, Bill. Tell Joe I said... Nothing, really.
And there's just one other thing, Mr. President.
Yeah.
My campaign people saw that you waived your appearance fee to be out there, and they were wondering, and I have to say, I kind of agree with them. If you'd waive your fee to for coming out here to be with me last week.
Hey, Tony.
Mr. President, it's so good to see you. Hey,
give me a half sec here. Joe, I'm with the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. We'll talk in a day or two.
Well, it would be very bad for the Democratic Party if I was taken down by a hard-left millionaire.
Oh, it'd be tragic, man. I'll talk to you soon. Tony.
Bill.
Tony Bill's here.
Who?
Just teasing you, man. How you been? You joined the Look How Gray I've Gotten Lately Club.
Well, you founded it. I had to join. But yes, standing beside George W. Bush through three wars now, I can take a little bit of the perkiness out of one.
Hey, try to stand beside Al Gore. But you're still hanging in there.
Yes.
They can't impeach you. No. They can't run anybody decent against
right.
you. You're out on your own timetable.
Yes.
Man, that's pretty smooth.
Well, when I can focus past the personal vilification and the contumely from other world leaders with whom I speak on a regular basis, it is pretty smooth indeed. And you're looking rather splendid, Bill.
Yeah, keeping my weight down, keeping my golf score steady, and doing okay.
Did you really waive your appearance fee?
Man, I got more than $100,000 worth of publicity out of that. It was Rupert's idea.
I'm sure it was. But, Havna, yes, this is the PM.
Hey, Blair Bear, how's my favorite non-poodle?
Hello, Mr. President. I'm here with
Tony, know you're busy hobbing and nobbing and everything.
Yes.
Just want to run this past you one more time before we put it in concrete.
Yes, sir.
We do want a ceasefire,
right.
But only after the Security Council signs off on our plans for a sustainable peace that addresses root causes. That's what I have in my think pad.
As I recall, Mr. President, that is the formulation we agreed to. But I didn't know you had a computer.
Oh, that's just what I call my brain. Hey, listen, Tony the Tiger, I don't think I mentioned this to you after the G8 conference, but I learned to my charade that you don't want to be standing behind Angela Merkel. Whee!
Tony, it won't be a minute more, Bill.
Hey. Who are you there with, Tony? Wish I could be out there, too, but of course, some of us have serious world responsibilities. Also, I probably should have received an invitation before.
Sir, I put it to you.
Oh,
then.
No, I've told you this before, Tiger. Nobody puts it to me. But look here.
Yes.
If we're to have moral clarity about addressing root causes,
yes.
let me just get one thing straight.
Right.
What are the root causes? I mean, I know they're terrorists because they hate freedom.
Well, that's very root, sir. Marvelously root.
Because Condé says the Lebanese want us to spell out the root causes.
Yes.
And I said T-E-R-R-O-R-I, and then she cut me off and told me to call you.
Right.
Tony, I think I need a few minutes of alone time. I'll see you at the dinner, all right?
Of course, Bill. Mr. President, I think rather than making the root causes the tripwire for the ceasefire, we should grasp the nettle and call for a ceasefire on the road to Dili.
Like I've ever needed alone time when I'm not with Hill. Hey, John!
Mr. President, your wife is one hell of a vodka drinker.
You know, Senator McCain, this is probably the only moment in American history where a man can say that to another man about that man's wife and not have to face physical violence. How are you, man?
I'm just saying that woman is like one of the boys.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
And, you know, it was a trip to Estonia, for God's sake. It's either a vodka drinking game or take an Ambien and wake me when we're leaving.
Listen, I knew about what happened. You don't owe me an explanation. And I don't blame you for not inviting her along on your trips anymore. Hell, if I could...
You're looking forward to this this little powwow?
Never too busy to make new friends. Speaking of which, there goes our host right now.
Mr. President, Mr. Senator, just on my way to see Roger Ailes. He's having some kind of problem checking in. Apparently the tub in his room is too small.
Rupert, I hope the fact that you held a fundraiser for Hillary won't prevent you from performing similar services for a senator from Arizona should the need arise.
Mr. Senator, if and when the time comes, I'll be such a fervent supporter, you just might want to pass a law to reform me. All right, must go. Welcome all. See you at dinner.
Right.
Word to the wise. Learn Chinese.
Man, if Ted Turner just hadn't been a cracker, he might have grown up to be that fella. Hmm. Hey, you expecting any calls?
Boy, I didn't even bring my phone.
I'm turning mine off. Let's go get ourselves a good, strong Diet Coke.
and middle-aged powerlessness. Together, they add up to Clinton something, the Harlem Years.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to listen to news of the warm.
Soft, listen to the warm.
Dayline London.
We can listen to the warm.
Scientists are blaming global warming for the ice melt on Italy's famous Matterhorn mountain peak in the Alps mountain range due to land slippage thanks to melting ice and snow cover. Italian routes up to the Matterhorn have now been closed. Michel Comi, an Italian mountain climate expert, said, for several weeks now, zero temperatures have only been found above 4,000 meters. This means that all the rock fractures, generally held together by the ice, which acts as a glue, give way because the ice melts, leading to a situation of instability. What isn't normal is the acceleration of these phenomena. The classic ice and snow climbing routes aren't accessible in July anymore. That is a huge anomaly. So they'll have to make adjustments at Disneyland, I guess. And climate change could dramatically change the face of British tourism in the next 20 years, with European tourists flocking to the UK to escape unbearably hot continental summer. According to experts, that's what you need, experts on who's going to be touring where and 20 years. Research shows that European tourists may choose to holiday in Britain as resorts nearer to home become too hot. Weather changes may provide revival opportunities for northern seaside towns such as Blackpool and put new strains on roads and development in southern coastal regions. A study in the Journal of Sustainable Tourism said. Likelihood is that Mediterranean summers may be too hot for tourists after 2020 as a result of too much heat and water shortages. There were opportunities for the revival of northern European resorts. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen. And because we're taking Homeland Security so seriously, all of us, it comes as a surprise, does it, that the multi-billion dollar surge in federal contracting to bolster the nation's defenses of the homeland in the wake of, you know what, has been marred by extensive waste and misspent funds, according to a new bipartisan congressional report. Since the Homeland Security Department's formation in 2003, an explosion, don't worry, it's just no bid contracts, yet exploded. And a critical shortage of trained government contract managers have created a system prone to abuse. So let's fix it by cutting down the amount of emergency funds we give to hurricane victims from now on. That's FEMA's new policy. That'll fix the billions of dollars in abuse. Based on a comprehensive survey of hundreds of government audits, 32 Homeland Security Department contracts worth $34 billion have experienced significant overcharges, wasteful spending, or mismanagement. The report was obtained by the Washington Post. The value of contracts without competition increased just 700%. That is an explosion to $5.5 billion. More than the total contracts the agency set out the year it was created. Among the contracts that went awry were deals for hiring airport screeners, inspecting airport luggage, detecting radiation at the nation's ports, securing the borders, and housing Hurricane Katrina evacuees. Aside from that, everything's being handled fine. Rest easy. Sleep well.
I'm blue every Monday, thinking over Sunday, that one day when I'm with you. It seems that I sigh all day Tuesday, I cry all day Wednesday. Oh my, how I long for you. And then comes Thursday, gee, it's long, it never gets by. Friday makes me feel just like I'm gonna die. But after payday is my fun day. I shine all day Sunday, that one day when I'm with you. Thursday, gee, it's long, it never goes by. Friday makes me feel like I'm gonna die. But after payday is my fun day. I shine all day Sunday, that one day when I'm with you. That one day, it's a fun day. Sunday is my day with you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. On Channel 136 at Sirius Satellite Radio, around the world via the internet at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, live and archived whenever you want it. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow. Available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. On the air at the Mighty 105 in Berlin. And it would be just like knowing those root causes if you could agree to join with me then, would you? All righty. Thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks and to Adrian Bodnam at Capital Radio London Town for getting us on the air out of here the last 3 weeks. We'll miss you, mate. The show playlist available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica. Still, really? Yes. Even now, recognized around the world, the community that is, as the home of the homeless. So long from London.